Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends and neighbors. This is your pal, Mudtoe Sasquatch. The program is Mudtoe at Midnight. Thank you for joining me. Your comments are always welcome. You can tweet my Twitter at ampersand Mudtoe Sasquatch. That's MUDTOE. SASQUATCH. So email me at mudtoesasquatch@gmail.com. Thanks again for joining me this evening. I would like to send out shout-outs and wonderful good wishes to my father, Big Papa Sasquatch. Not really his name, but who turned 75 this week. So quite an accomplishment, three quarters of a century. For Dad, very proud of him, survived a heart attack, gave up cigarettes. We're pretty sure he gave up cigarettes. Certainly he doesn't smoke nearly as much as he used to. And clean living, and lost some weight, and does some walking every day, and by God, made it to 75 years old when we weren't real sure he was going to make it past 60, so inspiration to me and to everyone around him. I think he's certainly an original, someone who has American values, what are described as American values, and walks the walk. If so many people talk about American values but don't live them, I would say, although certainly I'm an interested party, but I would say that my father is one man that I know who lives the things he believes. And though we have some disagreements on issues that are really rather peripheral when you think about it, I'm very proud to call him my father. And thanks for helping to give me life. So, there's that. Now, today I am joining you. Well, we'll step back a bit. Last week I joined you from my ersatz high school reunion. This week I'm joining you from the parking lot of the neighborhood grocery store where I do my shopping. I just got back in town from the football game I was filming. My plan was to stop by, pick up a few things, and then go back to the house and do the show. But, as they say about the best laid plans of mice and men, didn't get back there, got back from the football game later than I had anticipated. So I pulled into the parking lot here at the grocery store, and I'm planning on going in as soon as I'm done with this little half-an-hour phone call. As I'm sitting here thinking about this, I said, well, maybe I'll just take you in with me, before the show is over, if I run out of stuff to talk about. We'll just go into the grocery store and you can help me pick out my milk and my cheese and my sandwich stuff. If you're good, before the show's over, we'll walk into the Giant Eagle and confuse people. And we'll be confused at all. I'm just a guy talking on a cell phone. What's unusual about that? So anyway, thank you for joining me today in the parking lot. The creepiest thing was going on just before I went on the air. I really don't know what it must have been. Well, just grab it first. There's just this tiny little truck-looking kind of instrument, and this there was a driver. At first, I wasn't entirely sure there was someone driving it, but there was somebody driving it, and he was just whooshing around the parking lot, doing little circles and tight turns and going around the cars, and the parking lot's mostly empty. It's pretty late. The grocery store's open all night, and he was driving around and, coming close to my car, and just all over the place, and I'd say the thing kind of looked like a small Zamboni, if you know what a Zamboni is, at the hockey games that resurfaces the ice. And so I'm thinking it must have been some sort of cleaning device. He was sweeping the parking lot, but damn, that freaked me out. I was saying, I really wish he would leave, and eventually he did. But, man, that was freaky. A freaky thing was happening. A new freaky thing was happening, and it just took me a while to process it. Well, I have, and now I'm here with you and ready to share this time with you. Well, we are, as I always say, in ceremony. Now, what does that mean? I don't always talk about what that means. The ceremony, we're talking about a Native American ceremony. Am I a Native American? I am a Native American in the sense that I was born in America. In the sense that do I have any direct lineage to the original people who were in this place before Europeans came here? The answer would be no, I don't. Although, if you go with the six degrees of separation thing, everybody is tied to everybody eventually. But as far as anything direct, you know, parents, grandparents, anything along that line, no, I cannot make that claim. So that sort of opens me to the charge that I am appropriating Native American culture. And I appreciate, I don't really think appreciate is the word I want, that I realize that I've opened myself to that criticism, and it could very well be valid. What I want to say is, you know, I adopted this spirituality because it spoke to me. There are parts of it that speak to me, and there are parts that don't. And as we say in 12-step, I picked up what worked for me, and I left the rest behind. So what I'm talking about is a personal philosophy. I'm not representing any particular Native American spirituality that has some sort of label or name to it. So I'm not claiming to be Lakota, or I'm not claiming any sort of specific Native American lineage. This is just a spirituality that I adopted because I needed a higher power for my 12 steps, and it's something that's worked well for me, and it's changed and it's developed over time. Now, the problem is, I don't know if this is a problem, I haven't experienced it, but I know that many people, especially the Native type, Native Americans, the ones who are of the lineages that I was just talking about, have experienced discrimination at the hands of the white European-based government, in that they haven't been allowed to practice their religion as they've practiced it for generations. And so laws eventually were made, federal laws and international laws that protect indigenous people being the ones who were here before we white Europeans got here. And it protects their ceremonies, it protects their culture. But it's not, I have to be very careful when I say this. There are very specific requirements. I think I'll back away from what I was originally going to say and say that there are very specific requirements that you have to meet. But once you meet those requirements, one of the basically is that you have to be associated with a bona fide Native American church, which I am. And so I can claim to be in ceremony because I have completed a course of study. I have filed a description of my medicine bundle with the chief of our church, Chief Cloudpiler in Missouri. And I answer only for myself. I don't answer for any other lineage. So when I say I'm in ceremony, it's a ceremony that I have devised for myself, mostly elements of Nemanha, Native American culture, but other things thrown in too that have meaning for me. And what it means from a practical sense for me to be in ceremony, it means that I am not subject to arrest for practicing my religion, okay? Which I prefer to call my spirituality, but for legal reasons I would call it my religion because that's what needs to be. When I'm practicing my religion, I am not, you're subject to arrest for doing so, if I can show that I am a bona fide member of a church. So I say that I'm in ceremony, and that protects me. Well, I am in ceremony. I don't just say that I'm in ceremony. I am in ceremony, and that protects me from prosecution. Now, do I suppose that I am actually going to be prosecuted for this radio show that I do? No. I really don't think that will happen, at least not in the present climate. But as I see more and more of people's liberties being taken away, I can envision a time when not just myself, but anyone who chooses to question the way that the sort of white European culture, the dominant culture, does things. I can see a time when people who question that are going to need the protection of federal international law. So I figured I'd just get it done early. So that's what I mean when the things come up at the, when I have that recording to play at the beginning of the show and I say I'm in ceremony. That's what I'm talking about. And right now I am in ceremony, although I'm not at my home. My medicine bundle is open on my shrine table. The incense is not burning because I'm not there to light it. But we are in ceremony. I should have brought something from my bundle to sort of solidify that. Perhaps I'll put my cell phone in my bundle. My cell phone, I would have to come up with some sort of reason for it to be there. But I'm going to say my heart, my soul is part of my bundle, and I brought that with me. So I am connected, always connected to my bundle. And as long as it's open on my table, I am always in ceremony. So if you're, again, from the federal government and looking to make some sort of sting on this anarchist, sorry, going to have to do that another day. All right, well, on the home front here, things, I'm in the midst of my long goodbye. I think I tweeted that. Never had an experience. I've had 4.5 weeks ago, I found out that this job I wanted at Ohio State, just said the name of my university. It's such a pain in the butt to do that. I think I've said this before. I'm sorry if I'm covering old ground. I was trying when I started the show, my feeling was it was going to be mostly about 12-step. And I still do talk about that some, but just not nearly as much as I originally thought it would. So the whole anonymity thing, although it's not so much the name, the Mudtoe name is a spiritual name that I have, and I want to use that regardless. But, you know, other elements of the show where I don't say where I live, and I don't say other people's names, and I don't say where I work and all that, was an anonymity thing. But it's so hard to do that. Okay, so, hey, look, it's Ohio State University. I live in Columbus, Ohio, so sue me. I didn't get the job I wanted there, and I've known that for 4.5 weeks. My contract isn't up till the end of August, so I'm going to be there for now. I've been working. I will have worked by the time it's over. I will have worked 5.5 weeks after I knew that I wasn't going to have a job there anymore. I've never had an experience like that before. At most, you know, when I've been fired from a job, I left that day. And most of the times when I quit a job, they wanted me to leave that day. A couple of times they wanted me to stay for a few days to help with a transition, but never this long, never more than a month. And that's where I'm in. I'm really wishing it was over with. It seems to be getting in the way of my moving on, knowing that I have to go back. 4 more days, I have to go back next week. I did get a resume and cover letter submitted to someone who has an actual job opening, so that happened. Want to get more of that done? I wanted to get more of that done today, but I just didn't. I was getting ready to go out and do my filming, and you know, things always take you longer than you think they're going to, especially the first day of the season. I'm very paranoid about making sure I have everything that I need. That turned out I did. My new battery that I was telling you about, works like a champ. Hardly even put a dent in the charge and did the whole game. So I'm very happy about that. $60 well spent. And very crowded at the game. I guess that would be the only negative. Well, it was crowded, and I guess it went pretty well. The filming went pretty well for, you know, being the first time in 10 months, the first of the new season. It went pretty well. I had a problem that I often have about, because when you're doing the game, they don't want you to do the whole game. They just want the plays. So you record a play, and then you turn the camera off, and then when they're ready for the next play, you turn it back on. And, you know, those of you who have used video cameras a lot probably know what I'm about to say. When you're filming something like that, eventually, one time, you miss it. You know, you hit the button, but you thought you hit it, but you didn't click it all the way or something. And now, all of a sudden, you're paused when you think you're recording, and you're recording when you think you're paused. And so you have, in my case, I have a long string of the things that go on between the plays instead of the plays, which is what I'm supposed to be filming. It happened at the end of the first half, the last possession, and I didn't miss anything, thank goodness. I've had it happen to me before where I missed scoring plays. You know, it's been worse before. and it always, you know, makes me nervous. First of all, because I get mad at myself because I want to do a good job. But then there's also this sort of threat that they give you, the people who I film for, is you have to get them a complete game or they have the right to not pay you. But, you know, I've had this, you know, whenever something like that goes wrong, I said, well, they're not going to pay me. But I've had it happen before, and I've never heard anything about it. You know, I shot an entire half of a game out of focus once, and I never heard anything about it. You know, they paid me. It was a blurry, it was a little bit soft. And it was not real easy to read the numbers. That's one of the things they like to, they need to be able to read the numbers so they can get the guys' names off the rosters and then tell, you know, who they're looking at. So I think in the his first game of the season, other than that one error at the end of the first half, I think it was pretty good. It was a little bit nerve-wracking because it was a big rivalry game, and so it was very crowded, and I'm not a big fan of crowds. I just don't do them very well. But in this case, I got through it. I had plenty to do, so I didn't have too much time to worry about the crowd being there. I had to... Let me tell you this, because it reminded me of something Bill Hicks, the late, great Bill Hicks comedian, talked about. He had a very similar experience, and I'll use his words to describe my experience. His experience was in a different context, but it was very, very similar. But I was working my camera, and you know, I was up at the top of the grandstand where I was filming, and I looked around, and there was this child running around, this kid, about 8 years old, and this kid was running around loose. Somebody let it loose. Bill Hicks was saying that about a kid on an airplane, that the kid was running around loose on the airplane. Someone had let it loose. That's like let a dog loose and let this kid loose. I thought that was a funny way to express it. And then it's kind of the way I felt. You know, somebody come take this kid. He's rushing around here, and I got to watch him so he doesn't knock my camera over. And I don't want him to get hurt either, you know, so. That was a little bit irritating, and I also had somebody stand beside me, and he stood, like, really close to where I was filming, like, you know, boundaries, boundaries. And really put it to where if I had to turn the camera, which sometimes you have to do if there's a really long run or pass or something, he's like, his arm was 6 inches from my camera. I couldn't have turned it if I needed to. And he knew, I guess, everybody who was coming into the stadium because he made an effort. You know, each time somebody came in, we were up at the top, and they were down at the bottom, and he wanted to let them know he was there because, of course, that was going to make their day to see him up there. So he would try and make contact with them by, you know, of course, shouting because there was, you know, the place was full and the marching band playing. You know, it wasn't easy to attract someone's attention from 200, 300 feet away. So he was just, I'm gonna move the phone a little bit away from my face here so it don't blow you out of the. Of your living room when I do this, and be advised I'm about to make loud noises. So this is what he was standing like right next to me, and he would do this. And he did that at least a dozen times. You can imagine, it was very nerve-wracking. Okay, I don't see anybody looking at me strangely for doing that in the middle of a Giant Eagle parking lot. I am in my car. They probably hear stranger things than that every day in this part of my great Midwest city, Columbus, which I have already mentioned to you. I tried to slow down a little bit. I was talking very quickly there. I could sense my heart starting to pound a little bit, getting a little bit of anxiousness, a little bit of adrenaline going. So I'm just going to take a couple of deep breaths, relax, calm down. Pleasant time here for everyone. No need for anxiousness. Let's just enjoy whatever happens here on the Mito Show. Okay, there we are. Now, so my job is going to be done next week. And so I've been thinking about food stamps. Unemployment is not an option because I haven't had a full-time job in six years, so I don't qualify. I still qualify, might qualify. I think I would qualify for food stamps based on the research I've done. And I feel no shame about taking food stamps. I've had them before. I was on them for about a year, about 5 years ago. And my feeling is I've paid into the system. You know, it's no shame to take out of the system when you need it. You know, so, and you don't have, my first experience with food stamps was when I was in college. and I was working at a drive-thru. I should explain, I know not everybody in the world has drive-thrus. A drive-thru is like a long garage full of groceries, and people drive into the garage, and they tell the attendant what groceries they want. It's not like they steal and shop for all their groceries, just as convenience stuff. They have milk and eggs and cigarettes and beer and what have you. And then the attendant gets it for them and pays them, and then they drive out the other end of the garage. And I met a guy, I think he was from upstate New York, and I said drive-thru to him. He didn't know what I was talking about. It wasn't that they have a different name for them there. They just don't have them there. It took a while for me to grasp that there are places where they don't have drive-thrus. Well, anyway, at the drive-thru, we took food stamps. And in the old days, they were like pieces of paper, like Monopoly money, that the people would get from the government, and they would bring them, but they could only spend them on food. But the thing was, the person would give you a $20 food stamp and buy a gallon of milk. And then you'd give them their change, you know, $18, $17, whatever it was. And then this person would immediately take the cash and buy beer and cigarettes. So actually, you know, obviously not what the food stamp money was intended for. So a change was made, and merchants like us were permitted to keep some food stamps in their cash registers, and we would give out food stamps in change as much as we could rather than in cash. And I was working the first day that this change went into effect, and there were quite a few people evidently who hadn't got the news. I mean, you're supposed to go to meetings at the welfare office, which they don't have welfare offices anymore. Back then they still had them. You're supposed to go to your meeting every couple of months or whatever it was, and they were supposed to tell you these things. Evidently, they weren't there, they didn't listen, or whatever it was, but there were several people who were not happy to receive to receive their $17, $18 in food stamps, which they now could not buy beer and cigarettes with. I don't mean to say that that's the majority of the people who were using food stamps at all. That was like a few people who wanted some, you know, who were expecting to get some cash back so they could buy some things. And it wasn't, when they wanted to buy stuff, it wasn't always beer and cigarettes. Sometimes they needed toilet paper. You know, and you need toilet paper, you know, but you can't pay for it with food stamps. Well, anyway, the food stamps now, as I say, I was on them about 5 years ago, and they don't have the little paper food stamps anymore. You get a card. It looks like a credit card. And they put a certain amount of money on it every month. And at first I thought you had to spend the whole thing. And so you're not, obviously you're not supposed to buy groceries for other people, but I don't know exactly how you police that. I thought I was running out of time. And I went shopping with my roommate, and we bought stuff together, and then we separated it when we got home, and he paid me for the extra. So I guess I am at one time was a food stamp profiteer, to the tune of about $81. It was because I thought I was about to use it, to lose it. And it turned out it's not use it or lose it. It will continue to accumulate on your card. Even if you don't qualify for food stamps anymore, you can still spend money that's accumulated on your card. So it's kind of neat. And so I'm almost looking forward to having one again. Although I'm certainly not looking forward to the process. It's a very dehumanizing process, much like the process of trying to find a job is dehumanizing. Just saw a commercial today, Mitt Romney saying, Obama doesn't believe in welfare to work, but I do believe in welfare to work, and I don't mind the idea of welfare to work. I just wonder where the jobs are going to come from. I mean, we're having trouble getting jobs now. How are we also going to get jobs for people who... I mean, that's the ultimate goal, I guess, is to find jobs for people on welfare. But, I mean, if you had a job, you probably wouldn't need welfare, would you? I mean, unless the jobs are going to be created government jobs, which kind of cuts against what Mitt Romney would seem to stand for. Or, I mean, if they're jobs that they're going to offer incentives for people in private industry to hire people, then does it become like the thing in Schindler's List, where you hire Jews instead of Poles because Jews are cheaper? So I'm going to hire the welfare person because they're cheaper than the person who's not on welfare? It sounds like the whole thing is problematic in an environment where people are already fighting for jobs. But, you know, I guess I'm not as smart as our politicians. I don't understand where it is that they're coming from. You know, I got according to the clock in the good old car here, that there's 6 minutes left. Let's see if I can just start this process of getting into the giant eagle. Now I've told you the name of the scripture story. I'm just falling apart today. Well, anyway, I'm getting out of the car now. As you can hear, working my mantra. I have this mantra now, I say, because I tend to use my advanced age and birthitude as an excuse for not doing physical things. So I have this mantra, I say, that my body will do whatever I need it to do. But that's not whatever I want it to do, necessarily, but whatever I need it to do. So, and I found that sometimes when I say that, I'm then able to rise off of my fat ass and do something that I thought I couldn't do, like, say, get out of the car just now. And by the way, that's totally, one of my students when I was teaching school was the first person who ever called me a fat ass, which was not only disrespectful, but also inaccurate, because my ass happens to be one of my better features. But anyway, after giving you that information, what I was doing there was I got into my trunk, and I have a couple of these reusable bags, which seemed like a good idea at the time to have those. But as it turns out, they require many thousands of times the amount of energy to produce them as the plastic bags do. So you got to make sure you use them a lot. You know, don't have too many of them. Don't throw them away. Actually, the fact of the matter is I probably will not be able to use these enough to be able to break even, in terms of carbon footprint. So, it's one of those things, man. This green stuff is much more complicated than we thought. Okay, I'm inside the store now. I'm going to get my giant eagle cart. Put my giant eagle. I actually have one giant eagle bag, and I have one save the chimps bag that I got for giving money to the Save the Chimps people. And Save the Chimps is an organization that they go and they find chimpanzees who've been in not so much in zoos, but in carnivals and the ones you see in shopping malls and so forth. And what tends to happen with those is the person who owns them dies. And then there's nobody to take care of the chimpanzees. So this organization, Save the Chimps, acquires those chimps and reacclimates them and in some cases releases them into the wild, which is a neat thing. Okay. Well, the main thing I need is milk. Looks like we got some strawberries. I think I'm going to pick some up just because I like strawberries. The thing with fruit, though, is that it's boiled. I often get into I'm sorry, I'm very bad at multitasking. I'm doing something in my car, I can't talk. I get into these sort of periods when I'm just not eating my fruit, and then it all goes bad. Something else has just occurred to me. I don't know that I've ever spoken on my cell phone. Well, now I know, because I just got my 90-second warning. Okay, well, as we're going here, I'm seeing the bananas are awful ripe, so I don't think I'm going to take any of them. I'll be working my way over to the milk. I join you. I thank you for joining me this evening. It's rather unusual show next week. Who knows? I may be back in the studio next week, or I may be on the road, or I may be back in the grocery store again. Who knows? Thank you for listening. Please comment. As I said before, I enjoy hearing your comments, and I will speak to you again next week. Goodbye.